You're listening to the WHO podcast, and my name is Veronica Rima. In this episode, we look at climate change and the implications on human health. Over the past 10 days, delegations have assembled in Copenhagen for talks aimed at paving the way for a new global treaty on climate change. The conference offers the prospect of a robust political deal, endorsed by the world's leaders and witnessed by the world's people, setting out clear targets and a timeline for translation into law. We now know that climate change aggravates health problems, most of which are concentrated in the developing world. WHO's Director General, Dr. Margaret Chan, says that the impact on human health is the most significant measure of the harm done by climate change.
Already, nearly 1 billion people live on the margins of survival. It does not take much to push them over the brink. Food insecurity, water scarcity, storms, floods, droughts, population displacements, and polluted air, all of these events have a well-documented impact on health.
Dr. Chan says that policymakers have been slow to realise the threat of climate change to human health.
I have personally attended high-level conferences on climate change, where health was treated as a peripheral issue. This must change. Health concerns need to be at the centre of the debate. The impact on human health is the most significant measure of the harm done by climate change.
Dr. Dermot Campbell-Lendrum works on climate change and health at WHO headquarters.
The main health risks that we see from climate change are basically worsening of problems that we already have. We already have a very large burden of disease, for example, from diarrhoea. It kills about 2.2 million people every year, almost all of them children in developing countries. There are about 1.1 million deaths each year from malaria and other vector-borne diseases. And malnutrition is the single biggest contributor to the burden of disease. That kills about 3.5 million people every year, again, mainly poor children in developing countries. And all of those conditions are highly sensitive to temperature and precipitation. So basically, the ongoing changes that we're seeing in the global climate threaten to make those current problems even worse and even harder to control.
Professor Andy Haynes is director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He recently chaired the International Task Force on Climate Change Mitigation and Public Health, which looked at public health effects of greenhouse gas mitigation strategies. The task force focused on four main sectors: household energy, urban land transport, food and agriculture, and electricity generation. They looked at policies that could substantially cut greenhouse gas emissions and then assessed the impact of those policies on health.
In all four of those sectors, there are potentially quite substantial benefits to be had to public health. In lower-income countries, we could get major benefits to public health in the near term by reducing indoor air pollution, responsible for about 1.6 million deaths a year. And much of it comes from the burning of biomass fuels in very inefficient cook stoves. That's a major public health problem, which has impacts particularly on the health of children and women.
Significant benefits were found by implementing policies within the transport sector.
We modelled impacts in London and Delhi, particularly by introducing more efficient private cars and also by increasing active transport, that is to say, walking and cycling in particular. And what we found was that both in London and Delhi, this could have substantial benefits for public health. For example, by reducing ischemic heart disease, cerebrovascular disease, dementia, some types of cancer, and particularly in the case of Delhi, diabetes as well. And that's because many of these diseases are related to inactivity and, of course, to obesity.
The food and agriculture sector is thought to be responsible for about 10 to 12% of global greenhouse gas emissions, and these are set to rise by 50% by 2030. This is driven by the production of livestock to meet the increasing global demands for animal source foods.
the clear indication is that in high-consuming countries, moderate and achievable reductions in animal product consumption could benefit the environment as well as potentially improving population health by reducing saturated fat intake.
WHO's Dermot Campbell-Lendrum says that many of the actions we need to take to reduce greenhouse gas emissions will bring important co-benefits.
I think there's been an appreciation within the last few years that we can no longer see climate change just as an economic issue or just as an environmental issue. This is really a discussion about protecting the life support systems for human life as well as all other forms of life on Earth.
If you would like to read the report of the International Task Force or obtain related information, there are links on the transcript page of this podcast episode. Look for the link to the podcast on the homepage of our website at www.who.int. That's all for this episode of the WHO podcast. Thanks for listening. If you have any comments on our podcast or have any suggestions for future health topics, do drop us a line. Our email address is podcast@who.int. For the World Health Organization, this is Veronica Rima in Geneva.